Your patients are asking about GLP-1s. Amazon Pharmacy makes prescribing them easy. From commercial to Medicare to self-pay, Amazon Pharmacy supports the prior authorization process and handles claims and home delivery. GLP-1 access made simple. Prof. Rez here. If you haven't already, go purchase The Discipline of Diagnosis on Amazon. It truly is a great book. In fact, Robbie says it's his favorite book.
Is it Reza loves Robbie or Robbie loves Reza? It's the best palindrome, you will be so impressed. Oh, it's the mathematician and the magician laying out the art of deduction. It's RLR.
Welcome back, Clinical Problem Solvers.
You know, Prof. Reza, it's really awesome that you have opened every single one of these, because your voice should be the first voice that all these people hear. I've gotten four or five people separately tell me that they really miss you on VMR and it's time for you to come back. And so I was really, really excited that you're doing the double in August and September. Prof. Rez, people are missing you. But I'm telling you all this because people are showing me love too now. I got two messages from two people in Germany who got my number from the last podcast episode. And messaged me. Hadi and Lucas messaged me a picture of them reading the RLR book. And both of them said, to hell with your schemas. Give me the acai recipe. So tomorrow I want to record them a video of me making the acai. And it's cool to get some love, Prof. Rez. Like, these texts are really nice.
Dude, that's incredible. You deserve all the texts in the world.
Maybe two.
Well, huge shout out to them. And if they don't mind leaving an Amazon review, we would greatly appreciate it.
I think both of them said they're going to leave a review once they've read it.
Well, we're almost to 1,300 books.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully we can get to 2,000 by the end of the year.
I thought you were going to say end of the week, but yeah.
How are you, man? What's new?
I'm cruising, Prof. Rez. You know, I will acknowledge to people that last week I presented a case to Prof. Rez that was more just a story to tell you all. And so today I felt a little guilty after that because, you know, I'm happy that you all know that story, but we missed out on like dissection and analysis from Prof. Rez. And I'm more excited today because Prof. Rez has been back hitting the books. So he's been in the clinical reasoning gym, and Prof. Rez, the case I have for you today, I will just tell you one thing about it, if you don't mind, to help you. Yeah, it is unlike any other case I presented to you, because every other case I presented to you evolves in the ER and the hospital. This is a 3-month outpatient case.
Wow.
So I think it's only fair that you know that, sort of think about your analysis.
My only regret is that we're not in a jacuzzi with some of the as you're telling me the story.
Prof. Rez, this is making it into book number two.
Let's go.
You ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So this is an really, really wonderful human being who I got to know over several ER visits. And he came in to the emergency room, Prof. Rez, with 3 days of left hip pain. And let me stop there, see what you think.
Yeah, so that, left hip pain, not a common chief concern that at least I encounter, but like any musculoskeletal symptom, you really want to take a look at the area that the patient is concerned about. And the hip is a little more challenging than the knee or the wrist or other joints because it's a deep-seated joint. So you can look at it and it can look completely normal, but there is underlying pathology deep within that joint. So I think what would be most helpful, quite frankly, is just doing an exam. And with any joint, you want to look for range of motion. You want to look for weight bearing status. And also you want to ask about any recent traumatic event. And by trauma, I don't mean him getting hit by a car. Like, that's pretty obvious. But does he recall these last couple days or weeks that he tried to do something that he doesn't ordinarily do and he felt a little jolt or something like that? Because I think framing a joint problem as atraumatic versus traumatic is probably one of the first major branch points. And then the second one, is it inflamed or not? And that's where range of motion, vital signs, erythema, et cetera, are quite useful.
Beautiful profiles. I'm going to take your framing and layer upon it the information that you asked for. Just to tell you a little bit about him, he has two conditions. He has CLL that's been just being monitored closely. And so when I tell you the white count, don't panic. Well, I did so much. I completely forgot that he was going to have white count of 21, all lymphocytes. And he has diabetes. He is on an SGLT2 inhibitor and a GLP-1. The GLP-1 is just for him because he was trying to lose weight, and his A1C is well controlled, sixes, sevens. And so a little bit more about the story. So he, no trauma whatsoever, atrapanic. He woke up 3 days ago and felt an ache in his hip, and it's just progressed since then. He feels like it's really, really prominent in the morning, and it's still pretty bad during the day, but is a little bit better. He's still able to walk on it. Yeah, it's not influenced by him bearing weight. He doesn't have any systemic fevers, chills, or anything like that, and feels it more in the greater trochanteric area. He hasn't noticed any swelling, any skin changes. He has no idea why this is happening. And so he waited 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and then the third day is just like, I'm not happy where this is going. This is weird. This is bothersome. He did try Tylenol and ibuprofen, and they didn't really affect it too much. So I'll stop there and see what you think before I tell you the example.
Yeah, this is super helpful, Robbie. One thing is that, unlike groin pain where, or even scrotal pain, where we often wonder, could it be referred pain rather than actually pain at the site that the patient is complaining of because of all the proximity of these sensory nerve fibers that eventually make its way into the brain. Like hip pain, I can't think of really. Like, if it's a hip, like if it's not there, I can't think of where might radiation occur. So that's something I'm gonna have to fact check later. So I'm really focused at the anatomical location that the patient is reporting discomfort. As we mentioned, like the lack of redness, et cetera, is not too helpful because it's a deep joint. I think that something that's gonna be really meaningful on physical exam is just going to be you doing hip flexion, like literally having him take his knee, pointing it towards his chest, you actually trying to manipulate that joint to see if you can cause any more discomfort. As far as like his past medical history, I think CLL, it's almost like myelodysplastic syndrome. Yes, it is a malignancy. It's a liquid malignancy, but oftentimes we just watch it. And in fact, you don't want to treat it too prematurely because you can get resistance to future therapy if the patient were to need it. I'm not layering any of the diabetes or the CLL yet onto the hip. I think we need more clarity as to, what's going on with that joint. So yeah, I look forward to. Oh, one last thing. You said something really important here. You said that it's more stiff in the morning and maybe gets a little better with activity. I think we often think about this in terms of back pain and patients who have more stiffness in the morning and more relief with movement. It suggests more of an inflammatory rather than non-inflammatory osteoarthritis. So the fact that he's feeling a little more stiff in the morning and gets a little bit better with activity, maybe that might be a signal, a slight signal towards something inflammatory within that joint space.
So, when I went to examine him, I was really, really intrigued because I could get nothing. I saw him walk okay. He had a little bit of a limp. He has no systemic signs whatsoever. And when I arrange his hip, it doesn't really hurt him, but he like too much. But he's like, it just doesn't feel well or right. He doesn't have any sensory changes, any motor changes, no skin changes. Essentially, you can tell that it bothers him when he moves his hip, but it's not excruciating or nor in any specific direction. So I tell him that, and I say, you know what? Why don't we just do a workup? This is clearly bothersome to you. So, whenever I don't know what's going on, it's simple. I just get blood work and imaging, and so I get a CBC, renal, LFTs, ESR, CRP, and a uric acid, along with a hip and pelvis X-ray, and all of those, with the exception of a white count of 21,000, which I panicked first, and then saw the diff was just his baseline, was all completely normal. X-ray was also completely normal with no arthritis, no degenerative changes, so on and so forth. So I'll stop there and see what you think.
So it's so interesting, man. Because I'm really curious later after this. So ask you what prompted you to do an X-ray over a CT scan, and I can see, I don't even know what the literature says to do. What I do know is that a lot of times with the hip, especially if you're worried about fracture, not that we have any reason to be worried about fracture, X-ray can be negative preliminarily before you have the bony changes of the body trying to heal the site of fracture. So in a case like this, it's almost like that patient who comes in with like a long-standing headache. Do I, you might just go straight to the MR, but I don't know if that applies to the hip or not. But I'm just trying to think. So what might we miss? Like the X-ray being normal doesn't still rule out something happening at the hip joint bony part, and certainly doesn't rule out something happening intra-articularly. But intra-articularly, what do we worry about? We worry about inflammation. Usually the patient has a fever. There's a lot of pain with range of motion. The ESR is up. So I don't think we're getting much signal for inflammation. Now that I have the X-ray, honestly, I would say, look, if you're walking, if it doesn't get better or things worsen, come back. Otherwise, I would probably send them out. Now, what I'm really challenging myself with is at that time point zero, if I would have done a CT scan, and the CT might just tell you if there's any bony abnormality or if there's like a more subtle effusion that the X-ray might not pick up. So I would do some shared decision making with. I'd say, hey, look, the main things we rule out is fracture, which we ruled out. Pretty much, you haven't had trauma, the X-ray is negative, pretty high negative predictive value. And two, a septic and a crystalline joint, both of which are unlikely based on the lab data and the physical exam. So it's like, what else, what other like emergency are we missing? I can't think of any.
Yeah, that's so well said, Pravraz. You both have a very thoughtful approach to what could be happening, but also a realistic approach. This is visit number one on day number three in the context for the ER, right? And so exactly what you said, I told him is like, hey, we could do some more testing, but why don't we give you some lidocaine and some muscle relaxers and see how this goes. And so Pravraz, I don't meet him for another 3 months, but I'm very intrigued by him because I don't know. There's just something about the story. And I was like, I haven't seen this pattern before. I'm curious to see how it goes. So I put him on my follow-up list. And I check 1 week later and I see that he went to his primary care doctor and that he now told her that the discomfort is now on the right side as well and that he feels weak. And so she orders an MRI of the lumbar spine. And let me stop there to see what you think about that evolution and that test.
Yeah, it just reminds me of like a bunch of our prior RLR episodes that something starting unilaterally or asymmetrically doesn't mean it can't become symmetric. And that's like the beginning of the actual underlying pathology. Because a lot of times in medicine, when we're reasoning through a problem, knowing if something is asymmetric versus symmetric really influences the differential diagnosis. So I think for this patient, now all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, there's a symmetric problem. The weakness is interesting because weakness sometimes is difficult to tease out from someone just having pain. So I'm not yet sold that he has objective weakness, but I totally understand why the primary care doctor would want to get an MRI if there is weakness and there's bilateral, discomfort. I was actually, doing a CPC today, which is your CPC, where you go and you, I mean, if anyone hasn't done CPC number 18, please go and do it from this year. That's Robbie as a discussant. And there, based on the patient's pain and discomfort, he's able to localize the disease to the plexus. So what I'm trying to say here is that if this is a nerve problem, if it was truly spinal cord, I would expect like some kind of sensory deficit. I wouldn't expect this guy to be so local in the two like hip joints because that tells me it's more of either a nerve root problem, more so than the spinal cord. All that is to say, I'm still not sure where we are, Robbie. Like, but what I am sure of is that now all of a sudden I'm wondering if the same way it took time for this to become symmetric, might it take time for his body to show inflammation that we didn't uncover on part one? So, in addition to the MRI, I would be curious to repeating the other studies and even getting that MRI. I may extend it down to the pelvis and ask a radiologist to include the hip joints, because it's still, I haven't really clarified the problem based on the information you've presented so far.
Superb, Raphros. You're planting a lot of seeds that will definitely bear fruit. So let me tell you the data as it was obtained. He gets the MRI first. It was a non-contrast MRI that showed severe degenerative disease of the lumbosacral spine with moderate spinal canal stenosis. So his PCP refers him to orthopedic surgery, who does the kind of this kinds of surgeries in the San Francisco VA, sometimes neurosurgery, but usually orthopedics. He gets another set of labs in between these visits I see, and his white count is the same, his renal panel is the same, his LFTs are the same. No other tests are obtained. And he goes to ortho, and ortho is like, you know what, this could be neurologic in nature. You do have moderate canal stenosis. It's weird that you don't have urinary symptoms. It's weird that it's the upper part of your body. They range the hips and they don't think there's anything wrong intrinsically with the hips based on their physical exam. But before they operate on him, they say, you know what, let's send you to neurology because we want to make sure that like this is the cord is actually your issue. So I'll stop there and see what
Well, I mean, someone needs to go and like give these orthopedic doctors like a box of chocolates. Because look how thoughtful this is.
Yeah,
They're
right.
dealing with a process that we can easily say is progressive, but is on the scale of chronic. It's not emergent. So you don't need to do an emergent intervention. It's not like he suddenly is in a wheelchair and can't walk, and there's clear evidence of spinal cord compression. So you just have to really congratulate them for not just letting diagnostic momentum take them. And I think this is well established in the literature, Robbie, that it's very difficult to have the clinical radiographic correlation for these types of symptoms of radicular pain, back pain, because a good chunk of these patients, they get operated on and nothing resolves. And so I'm not too in the know of that literature, but the most important thing you can do is be like, who actually benefits? Not only has there has to be a match between the presentation and the radiographic findings, but even when there is a match, what qualifiers means a patient will benefit from decompressive surgery? And I think the not using gadolinium here probably limits us somewhat, because I think with gadolinium, all of a sudden, if that cord is inflamed at all, if it's irritated, you're going to see enhancement because you have a breakdown of the blood-brain barrier and the gadolinium leaches out, and that's what's seen on the radiographic images. You know, the fact that I'm reading more CPCs, I'm sure I don't sound any different than I do on prior episodes. But you
No.
know, it's like in my right now, I'm like overweight because I haven't exercised. But if I start walking, even though there's no physical change in my body in the mirror, I feel like I'm looking at Cristiano Ronaldo staring back from that mirror. So right now I feel like Rob is staring back right from that mirror. But I think there's a lot of limitations. And then also, like in my experience, of course, I don't take care of a lot of patients with radiculopathy, but it's usually unilateral, or like one side is way worse than the other. Like to have like what you're implying here, what we're implying is that this patient has DJD leading to bilateral L5S1 radiculopathy. Why? Because if it was truly spinal cord and a disc herniation, there should be a sensory level. There should be that urinary bowel. All that is to say, and you know, something that you taught us is like when the CNS or is inflamed or even the nerve roots, it might not leave a strong signature in the body where we like fever and white count, et cetera. But all that is to say this. All I wanted to say is like I applaud the orthopedic surgeons, and I can't wait to get the neurologic exam to see if we can make progress.
A slightly superb neurologist sees him named Aaron Berkowitz.
Oh my gosh.
And he says quite simply, this is not neurologic. His exam is completely normal. And whatever he has is not neuro. And I literally, he like wrote one of those notes where it's just like, not my problem. No, it's in a very, very articulate way. In the meantime, the patient develops new neck pain, Profres. And again, I don't see him, so I can't give you the details, but I see that his PCP obtains an MRI of the neck. And it also has pretty bad DJD with moderate canal stenosis. He gets another round of labs, CBC, renal, LFTs. uric acid, CPK, all normal. He has multiple visit after visit after visit after visit for severe pain. He does not want to start opiates. He's very, very reluctant to do that. So he is on Flexeril, gabapentin, Tylenol, lidocaine patches, this, that, or the other. I see him once in the ER waiting room because that's where after hours you wait for your Uber and travel rides back. And I went up and chatted with him, and I was just because I was following his chart, and he was using this large wooden cane, one of those massive wooden canes, to support him walking on the left side because he said his hip bothered him so much and his neck bothered him so much. And I invited him to come back and, like, come see us, and we're here to help you. And I'm sorry this is going through. I, in fact, asked him if he wanted to for us to come lay a hands on him and see how we can help him. He's like, no, I've had enough. So let me stop there. And I will tell you that the next time he comes back, he sees one of my colleagues, actually one of the most junior people in the ER, who is just amazing. And I'll tell you what happens when he comes back. But curious what you think with all this data.
Well, one, I feel bad for this gentleman, and kudos to you for following along. What a story this is unfolding as, and really feels like, yeah, like a really good CPC, but hopefully bread and butter. I think just to be very clear with the audience, the reason that you keep giving us a uric acid is that in patients with CLL, they have a lot of cells. Those cells may turn over. You get, breakdown of DNA, which ends up with uric acid. So these patients are at risk of gout. But nothing about his presentation sounds like really like a strong inflammatory process, be it gout. The fact like that he's now having neck pain, I don't think it's secondary to his degenerative joint disease, but rather it seems now we have, I always forget the quote that Mike Najat says about like two body parts that are so separate in space. And now we have the neck and we have the hip. And so the question is there something happening? You would imagine that whatever's happening in those hip joints is now happening in the neck. And it's not through a contiguous process because we have like this inner space in the thoracic abdominal region that is unaffected. And so now my mind is thinking like, so what could be potentially happening in all these spaces that's not just mechanical from degenerative joint disease? And again, that would just be odd the way that this is manifesting as. So could something be invading like the hips possibly and the neck space? And this category of diseases would be like an infiltrative process or something that has metastasized. But the CLL, like 20 isn't that high. And it would really surprise me if he has like lymphocytic infiltration of multiple nerves and the neck region. Other than that, so like the question becomes like, what do we do next? I think honestly, like I'm really interested in more imaging because there's no pattern that comes to mind for me at least to be able to say this makes me think of this particular illness. And it's, yeah, like I think, Robbie, what I would do next is I would do an MRI, but I would use gadolinium and I would isolate the hip joint and probably the neck if possible, but maybe starting with one and going from there. I just really don't know. It's unfortunately, there's no pattern that has emerged for me based on this.
Professor, so this will remind you of the cerebellar case I presented to you, where sometimes you just have to wait, unfortunately. So he comes back a total of 3 months, around 3 months after his first visit, and he comes back and he's like this. And my colleague says, figures out that he now has this presentation. Bilateral hip AM predominant stiffness with severe pain, neck
Oh man.
stiffness and severe pain, and
Yeah.
finally now severe shoulder
Yeah.
pain and
Yeah.
stiffness. And so that becomes a problem representation.
Yes.
He looks back and he finds that the only time any inflammatory markers were sent were that initial visit 3 days when they were normal.
Yes.
So let me stop there and see how you would, what you're thinking, and how would you manage the
Now
situation.
it's just yelling, man, the way you're presenting. And now a pattern has certainly emerged. And I think that what was challenging getting there was if you separate inflammation from the joint, but once you start building this sort of sense of like, no, the joints are inflamed. And the audience are probably like, Reza, just say what it is. Why are you teasing us so much? And the truth is, I was going to use this as the example. The way I remember like inflammatory stuff gets better with activity is RA, because RA is relief with activity. And now you're saying a symmetric polyarthritis that involves the neck region, it's yelling rheumatoid arthritis. And so what I would do next is I would get X-rays of the hands. I would get a CCP and RF, and I would be activating my symmetric polyarthritis schema with an emphasis on the larger joints and the neck region. And we know the neck is really involved in RA because these patients, before you do any kind of anesthesia, you got to be very careful and have a cervical X-ray. I'd be surprised though if the MRI doesn't mention some of the pathognomonic findings of what we would expect. But maybe they weren't looking for it. I don't know.
Ready for your final twist?
Yes.
His hand exam, foot exam, hand x-rays, and foot x-rays done by Dr. Permal are normal. His RF is negative, and his CCP is negative. His ESR is 70, and his CRP is 50. And he keeps saying, "My shoulders and hips are so stiff and I cannot move them at all." And so a diagnostic maneuver is done by a consultant that clinches the diagnosis.
Is a diagnostic maneuver 20 milligrams of prednisone?
15.
15. Yeah, so it's so interesting. Wow. This is a really good case. Holy gosh. Such a good case. The one time I took care of a patient with polymyalgia rheumatica, and it's so interesting. This is such a great case to go back and look at like mimics of RA
Definitely on there.
What's that?
There's literally cases of there's literally case series of adult onset RA and PMR, how to distinguish the two. This is a age-old dilemma.
Unreal, man. I can't wait to hear what you have to say about that. But yeah, like by definition, polymyalgia rheumatica, like these patients have pain and discomfort and stiffness. And the one patient I took care of in Baltimore, she literally couldn't comb her hair because of the stiffness in her shoulder. And as soon as she got, like within a day of getting the prednisone, she like had made the hospital bed. She was like combing her hair. And I think that's really important. So like that probably is your last and most important diagnostic maneuver is giving the prednisone and seeing how the patient responds. But yeah, I would love to learn from you on like what you learned from this case and like the distinctions between the two, et cetera.
There's nothing left to learn, Prof, as your discussion was absolutely superb. I only have one thing to emphasize, and just to be transparent, when I saw this patient, he had the opposite of polymyalgia rheumatica. He had oligomyalgia, not rheumatica, where he only had pain in one body part with normal inflammatory markers. So the problem of oligomyalgia, or sorry, the problem of monomyalgia non-rheumatica was impossible to solve. Impossible. Impossible. But slowly, he became oligomyalgia, but nobody f added the rheumatica part, the inflammatory aspect. So he became oligomyalgia unknownica. And then only after 3 months did he become truly polymyalgia. And thanks to Dr. Permal, rheumatica with inflammatory ESR, CRP. And so I was, Prof. Rez, I felt so bad, to be honest with you, because I knew there was something wrong with him. And but he suffered for 3 months. I saw him sitting in a cane in the ER once. I saw visit after visit after visit, absolutely miserable. Did I know this diagnosis? Yes. I wish I had like I wish I had, I didn't notice that he didn't get another repeat ESR CRP. I guarantee you, if there was a repeat ESR CRP accidentally ordered by any human being under the sun or the lab, the people would have figured this out right away. Because when you're in that much pain and you have a high ESR CRP, you know at least, okay, is it adult onset RA or is it PMR? And I think it's probably too niche to discuss the distinction between adult onset RA and PMR. That's probably good reading fodder for those of you who are interested. But I think. I sat there preparing this case for you, Prof. Rez, and I was like, man, this reminds me so much of one of the first cases I presented to you on Patreon of that gentleman who had unilateral ataxia for 3 days. And we were like, does he have a tumor? Does he have a stroke? And then finally he has bilateral ataxia, and then he has EBV cerebellitis. Remember that case?
I do very well.
This is just like that. It's impossible to solve initially. And so I think ultimately, like you said, you kept saying over and over again, masterful discussion. This is not, a pattern has not emerged. It hasn't emerged. There was no pattern. The pattern that he finally had, he probably had it for a month, but he didn't come to care because he was frustrated. But sometimes you just have to acknowledge, as you said at the beginning of Aliquot One, is there's no emergency here. Let's see how it goes. And just incredibly humbling way about this diagnosis, and honestly, a pretty common story. It's very, very annoying. It evolves sometimes pretty slowly. It doesn't always isn't always symmetric. So you sometimes have to be patient and just don't. An unexplained ESR CRP will be your saving clue. So I'll give you some follow up. So it's crazy, Prof. Red. So he met Aaron. And then guess who his rheumatologist is? The one and only Kara Lau, who gave him 15 milligrams of prednisone, then sent him to me 3 days ago because he got a glucose of 580. So I had to control his sugar in the ER. Oh, but he looked like a whole new person, Prof. Rez. He was like so happy, so mobile, so functional. I bet that guy will take 15 of prednisone for the rest of his life. He was so happy on it. But yeah, that's the case I have for you. I'm curious what reflections you have, my friend.
Well, first of all, a huge shout out to Dr. Permal. Congratulations.
Yes.
You're well done. We fabulous job. I do want to, I know you said this is, a niche area for the audience to
Yeah.
go and read, but give us a few pearls.
Sure, sure, sure.
Please give us a few pearls on distinguishing these two.
So RA, so adult onset RA, sorry, it's called elderly onset EORA, EORA. Elderly onset RA is very hard to distinguish from PMR. That's because unlike young RA, elderly onset RA has a propensity to actually affect the axial skeleton, including the shoulders and the hips. And Prof. Rez, I'm going to show you a table. Perhaps we can actually, I don't know, because it's from a paper. So I don't know if we have license to share it. But here, check this table out. This allows you to distinguish the two. Wait,
Wow.
sorry. Where is, oh, here, this one. This.
Yes.
There's two tables here. This one, Prof. Rez, right?
Right. Yes.
Elderly onset RA from PMR. So elderly onset RA has a little bit on the proximal joints. PMR is crazy. Elderly onset RA is much more peripheral, and PMR can have a little. More tenosynovitis in RA. So you can see, like, it's hard, honestly, to distinguish them. There's a lot of overlap. But laboratory wise, much higher ESR in PMR and RF negativity in PMR. There are patients who have features of both where you have to wait over time to try to distinguish the two. For me, the takeaway is I can't remember this stuff. It doesn't commit to memory. I just know that in the labs, the ESR is much higher in PMR and the RF is part of the diagnostic criteria of EORA. But the thing to know is they can overlap, and sometimes it takes time to tease them out. So you can like bring the case to like, okay, I have a rheumatic disease, and sometimes it's a whole other 3 months to figure out is it actually RA or is it PMR.
Wow. Maybe we can provide that link for the audience on the website, the link of the paper. But I think this is what's why I love RLR more than any other resource. Because look, this is how medicine truly unfolds. And like this patient, if you think about it, got an MRI. I'm not going to say unnecessarily, because at the end of the day, we would be seeing a different story if this was like a cord compression, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
But got two MRIs, went to an orthopedic visit he didn't need to go to, a neurology visit he didn't need to go to, and the neurologist didn't even want to see him. But you know, it's like all of those things is like if a patient comes a little too early, like our patient with the
Yeah.
cholecystitis,
Right.
you know, or like if you come a little too gallstone pancreatitis, it's just if you come too early, you're doomed. If you come too late, you're doomed. So this is
Yeah.
actually on the
I
pa like
know.
patients, if you're listening to this, we expect you to come at the right time where we can make a correct diagnosis. If you come too early, shame on you. If you come too late, shame on you. That's my evil laugh, Robbie. And Robbie
Your
was frozen, so I had no reaction from him, but I still stayed true to what I was feeling.
power through, your power through, Prophet. But you know, I was not frozen enough not to catch the gist of what you said, which is that patients suck and they don't know when to come.
Well,
Is that the ultimate
I
takeaway?
love this kid. I can't wait to honestly read it. Now that I'm reading again, I mean it. I say I'm gonna read. I am. I haven't thought about PMR in a long time. I saw you had that RS3PE. I haven't thought about
Yes.
relapsing, remitting, synovitis, blah blah blah, peripheral edema. We'll figure out what those acronyms stand for. But thank you for this. This really has to make it in the book. Wow.
Right.
Unbelievable case.
Look at you, Prof. Rez, diagnosing pellagra and diagnosing PMR.
I did better with the pellagra, though.
You did. You did.
I saw you. You're like, okay, yeah. So now he wants this. Or, okay, those are negative, and he's really stiff. What do you think now, Rez?
Well, yeah, you know, I wanted you
But at the
to.
end of the day, what is seronegative RA?
Oh, Prof. Rez, this is, you'll see when you read, this is not an artificial. I didn't cushion it
Yeah.
for you.
No, you did
I
such a good job,
you
man.
if I I wish I could show you. So Kara, I didn't see him as the rheumatologist in the, so we call Dr. Permal consulted rheumatology. There was a different consultant then, and then they referred him to outpatient rheum clinic, and now Kara's his permanent rheumatologist. But her note was like, I don't know, this could be, because I made the exercise artificial for you. When he was diagnosed in the ER, when he was treated for 15 prednisone, they didn't know which one it was because the RF and CCP were pending. And so her note was like, favor PMR because of the height of the ESR and the proximal predominance, but could be RA, await RF
Is
CCP.
a
So,
responsive therapy like that, does that also favor PMR over
yeah, I think RA
other?
mounts with steroids too, at
Oh,
least
really? Wow.
temporarily.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
They use less prednisone
Yeah.
for RA. They tend to use only 5 or 10 for RA and then a little bit more for
Yes.
PMR.
Damn, dude. It's a very tough case. And then
Yeah.
they of course, you know, if someone has PMR, there's an increased risk for GCA as well.
Yeah,
And you
definitely.
have to screen them. Like, that's probably like every rheumatologist.
100%.
And watch out for that.
Dude, once people have that clue, it starts to become like, if he has that and jaw pain,
Yeah,
yeah, the
that's
part of
good.
the difficulties, he didn't have any of that stuff. But I hope we release this on the main podcast for your excellent discussion, and I will title it Oligomyalgia Non-Rheumatica.
If it's going on the
Yeah.
main podcast, guys, go and buy the book. What are you doing if you haven't purchased it yet? Go Amazon, Discipline of Diagnosis, buy it, support your neighborhood clinical problem solvers. We want to get to 2,000 by the end of the month.
Like,
Away, God.
<Do-do-do>.
That's a wrap, folks.